I'm a believer that art is dangerous because it connects everything and everyone. Politicians talk down on art and cut the budget because they know it puts poor and rich people together to have conversations about their dislike of politics.
There are many kinds of museums. From the supersized Smithsonian to the childhood home of Muhammad Ali, from Bangkok to Boston and everywhere in between. But museum goers only see part of the full picture. On this show, we open the crates, tell the stories, meet the people, and reveal the inner workings, unseen, unheard, until now. From Philbrook Museum of Art and Public Radio Tulsa, I'm your host, Jeff Martin, and this is Museum Confidential. During our summer break, I hopped on a plane and headed to Atlanta to talk with hip-hop artist and activist Killer Mike. You probably know him from his work with Run the Jewels or maybe even Outkast if we want to go back to the start. But this trip was to talk about museums, specifically Atlanta's High Museum of Art. A little over a year ago, Mike became a board member at the High. We wanted to check in and see how it's been during the first year. We sat down with Mike and High Museum Director Rand Suffolk in the studios of WABE in Atlanta. And by way of full disclosure, Rand first brought me into the museum world 10 years ago when he was director at Philbrook, where I still work. That connection, and some persistent texting on my part, helped make this interview possible. I guess I want to start with the question directed to Rand was, how did the conversation begin to get Mike on the board at the High?
Well, just in practical terms, every year we reach out to our existing board members and ask for nominations. And one of our board members, Fahamu Piku, actually, I don't know if that's secret or not, but he threw Mike's hat in the ring, and that was taken up by our nominating committee. And it just seemed like a great opportunity for the institution if Mike was willing to do it because of his reputation in the city, not only from the creative standpoint, but also, I mean, he's a remarkable community activist. And a lot of what he supports, I think, dovetails with some of the work that we've been trying to do at the museum. And so that was really the initiative for that.
Mike, what was your life like as a kid in relation to museums? Did you go to museums as a kid much, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I talk a lot about people like Ted Turner, Andrew Young, and the really what was fostered in Atlanta as a kid for me. Some of my most vivid memories are Center for Puppetry Arts, Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, and the High Museum of Art. And it's because whether it was free baseball tickets and basketball tickets because of Ted, or whether it was Atlanta Public Schools being more inclusive of arts at that time under the stewardship of, you know, the school board at that time in the mayor's office, we got access to a lot of stuff that working class kids in other cities didn't. And one of those things was the High. The Woodruff Museum actually scholarshiped me in high school to study on Saturdays because I was in the Art Talent Center and Arts Program at Frederick Douglass High School. Being a part of that, you'd go to class in the mornings, you know, you'd learn to draw and paint better, use charcoal, watercolor, stuff like that. And then you just waste some time going to the High Museum. So the High Museum's been a very big part of my life for a very long time, whether it was elementary school field trips or actually being over at the Woodruff Center in high school and then just kind of hanging out at the High. And then on the college, it was always a cheaper date than trying to go to the club. So I've been a fan. I've been a fan of the museum for virtually my entire life through school age till now. And a member, Michael and I, my daughter is very into sketching and drawing and stuff. So one of the things I did maybe when she was about 7, 8 years old, just bought us a dual membership.
You've been on the board for about a year now.
Yeah.
And you're a busy guy. You're traveling constantly. You know, like, how do you kind of balance that? Because I'm sure you're asked to do a million things.
Yeah, I just knew it was a tremendous honor. Rand was smart enough to put me on a committee that was full of people that are willing to call and bring me up to speed, Julie. I love the fact that the High understood when they were asking someone who sings and dances for a living and tours 150, 200 days a year, he understood it. And Rand's like, what you're doing as an ambassador is very good for us. So I'll make sure you have the data and information you need and make the meetings you can, and I have done that. And I'm just appreciative that they've been malleable and have worked with me because it is very important to me. Like, it matters to me that kids in Atlanta are open to art. It matters to me that as we grow into a progressive city and our economy grows and we become more of a mixed community, it matters to me because arts bring people together. They glue people together. And that's whether it's an arts festival in Reynolds Town or trips to the High. I believe that art is a grand connector of humanity, and it allows us to express something that's in us that's not logical all the time, that's not mathematical and trackable. So it's important to me to be on the board.
I think it's important also to understand, I mean, Mike is not an absentee trustee. You
know?
The great thing, he made sense for the museum, and I don't typically speak for the nominating committee, but I think he made sense for the museum because he already had a relationship with us. You know, when we were speaking about it, I'll never forget, one of the last things he said to me was like, look, I grew up going to that place. I'll do whatever I can for it. And so he does make meetings when he can, but we have a lot of busy people on our board that can't meet every single meeting. So in that sense, he's not exceptional in other ways, but not exceptional in that way. And he does other quiet things. You know, I found out a while back that, and I hope you don't mind me sharing this, but, you know, he had written a check to make sure that a local school, that their class could come and visit. You know, not everything we can do is always free to kids like that. So he's doing important work. And as he said, the advocacy part of it is important to us.
Rand, you've been at the museum for a little over 3 years now in this leadership role. And one of the things that you kind of tackled right away was trying to make it more of an inclusive place, looking at your diversity numbers and kind of changing that. And that was something that you started from day one and started to see impact pretty quickly. And a lot of those changes were underway when Mike came on board. And I know, Mike, that one of your goals is to take that work that was kind of already underway and really amplify it. Talk about the relationship. You guys can both chime in on that, about how that's changing and how you can kind of lend your skills to making that even better.
I was genuinely impressed by the numbers, period, that came in. Because there was, amongst African-American visitorship, I think it was already 51 or 54%. It was high. What I was more impressed by was Rand's demand for more. You know, his thing was, as inclusive as our numbers seem, we can be better. We can make sure more people of color and diversity. We can make sure that senior citizens feel welcome and have a day. We can make sure that kids are like the WWE effect. Like, the WWE won in wrestling because they recruiting us in third grade. Third grade, Hulkamania was coming to class. So he had such vision and refused to rest on his laurels. I got fired up. So, you know, I started talking to members of my community more in terms of the entertainment class, like, yo, we should be doing some more what we would look at as higher-end stuff, more artsy stuff, some stuff that's not about just going and picking up a bag. So hopefully you'll see more of that in terms of coming out of my community. But I was genuinely impressed by Rand's commitment to making sure all of Atlanta enjoyed this museum and making sure that this museum becomes one of the top museums in the country. And so I'm like, this is the point where it's almost like I like having the job of going out and amplifying that message, because it's such a pure message. It's not something I had to come, or any other person of color had to come and convince to be done. It's something that a guy right there at the front of the table said, we're going to do this. And, and it still impresses me.
Thanks, Mike. I mean, everybody's worked their tails off, I think, from our entire staff, which has been incredible, to our volunteers, to our trustees and so forth. Everyone's been behind it. I think what's been important for me with someone like Mike coming on is that he's a great bridge. You know, we have been doing this work. We're a continuous project, so there's still a ton of work for us to do. And so that bridge was important for two reasons. One is because him being a part of what we're about allows us, or gives us, a certain level of credibility with different segments of our audience than perhaps otherwise we'd have a chance to engage. And so that's important to us. And I think the second thing is that Atlanta is blessed with this incredible creative community. I mean, the hip-hop, you know, music industry and so forth is a vital force here in our city. And I think, kind of shame on us if, as an institution, another leading cultural organization in our community, if we can't figure out how to tap into that and build some partnerships and work, you know, in tandem to kind of move the needle on some things within our city, then we're really missing out on an incredible opportunity.
Mike, you travel all the time. Like you said, you're playing maybe 150 or 200 shows in a year, and you're not just traveling nationally, you're traveling internationally. Do you find that since you've kind of taken on this leadership role at the museum, do you try to hit up other museums when you're in other cities?
Of course, MoMA went out to, have been to the museums out in Oakland. My wife and I, now that, like we used to, like when you're a smaller band, you get there the day before, you do the show, you fly out the next morning. Now that we can actually go to Paris and stay for 3 to 5 days, now we go to the Louvre on a regular basis and hang out. You know, we walk around Amsterdam, see the sculpture. You know, so now we are doing British, you know, we've been in Britain too. So, you know, I love art, man. Like all the stuff that I saw in the books, like if Shayna sees that we're going somewhere and I've talked about something, she makes sure that we actually see it.
Well, when you're hitting up those museums, I guess my question is, are you kind of looking at it now, not just as a visitor, but you're kind of looking at it as someone who has ideas about what these places could do, or you're looking for things you maybe could bring back, like, hey, this place did this thing.
Let me say, I've been on the board a year, so I haven't dared to assert myself to have some of the courage, you know what I'm saying? But I've seen cool stuff that I was like, I wonder what our version of that's going to be, you know what I mean? But I have not been presumptuous enough to start coming up with a suggestion box. But I just enjoy, you know, just, I think we have a dope museum.
Yeah.
I think it looks particularly cool. I think we bring dope. Like, when I saw the Dolly exhibit here, I can't tell you what it meant to me to see Dolly in Atlanta, because, of course, I've always had to go other places to see bits and pieces here. But to walk through the full magnitude of those photos and paintings there in my hometown just meant a lot. So that, my thing is, not presumptuous enough to get suggestions yet, but I have definitely been a lot of other places, and I hope. Yeah, I mean, you know, I want to throw my tail around a little bit one day. But I'm definitely look at museums differently now. I definitely respect the work that goes into these exhibits and the care and concern that goes into even walking you through. You know, I definitely view them differently now. They're not just something cool to do because it was a cheap date or because I nerd out a fan out on art. I understand the bigger context of what a room means, the bigger context of what this sculpture painting means on this wall, so it's not a distraction from other stuff. So, yeah, I've grown up some.
Yeah. When it comes to museums, beyond the work that you're doing or the shows that you're presenting, one of the key components is perception in your community and how people perceive the institution. What do you think the perception of the High was like when you started, Rand, and what it is now? Has there been any kind of sea change as far as how people view the museum in terms of relevance in the community? Or were you just building on work that had already been done?
Well, I think we always stand on the shoulders of whatever came before. But I think for us, I've said this a lot of times, I have this thing which I call my completely unscientific survey, right? And there's one, and then I added two questions to it. But the first question I asked between my first interview and my first board meeting was, to just about anybody that would listen, was, is the High better known for what it is or what it does? And back then, almost without hesitation, 90% of the roughly 60 people I spoke to said what it is. And so the more I would tease a little bit of narrative out of people, what I learned was that everybody thought the High was exceptional, but there were very few people that thought that the High was essential within the community. And if you think about the work that we're trying to do, it's how do you take this thing that has had this incredible history of achievement and the legacy of aspiration, but turn it into an essential community resource? The second question I started asking people was, in Atlanta, besides sporting events and shopping malls, can you name an institution that brings everyone together? And I got crickets. And so if you think again about what we're trying to accomplish, as Mike said earlier, we want to be the place where all of Atlanta is comfortable coming together. We think that's an awesome opportunity and responsibility. But to be a place where, you know, the richest of the rich are coming together with the poorest of the poor, where every color of the LGBTQ rainbow comes together with every color of the ethnicity rainbow, we think there's something super powerful and very generative about that. And so I think we're now developing, because of the work that we've been doing in that space, I think it goes back again to the fact that we're developing a different kind of credibility in our community than perhaps we had in the past. We've always been an incredible and amazing place, but I think where we're starting to raise the bar is in that different kind of relevance.
Mike, rather than exclusive, it feels inclusive.
Yeah. Speak to that a little bit in terms of, as someone who's come here your whole life and, you know, it's been a part of your life since you were a kid.
What I mean is everything from their jazz nights to their dance to their socials has made the High a much more inclusive place to the artistic and working class that's not from the side of the tracks where that's normal, you know. It's brought the environment and the art class of Edgewood Avenue and Little Five Points right in the center of one of the finest, you know, highly sought after museums in the country. And it's happened without controversy or without condescending attitudes. It's happened in a very organic way, and you just don't see that other places. There's a line and a split between kids in New York who go to the museum and kids who don't, you know, and it shouldn't always be, but I can sense it when I'm there. You know, there's a line in other places, and when I was at the Louvre was one of the first times I felt, and I was a bit overwhelmed because there were so many people, but the Louvre was all-inclusive. Like, it literally was everybody from every around the world was there. And the High is one of the only museums I've been to in the States where, and there in when I was in Oakland, I forget the name of their museum, they had a Panther exhibit, but everybody was there at the same time. And like they say in rap, nobody was tripping. And that's just one of the things that I've gotten and I think has grown in this city. And I think that the museum has been on the front of that, not in the middle or on the back end of it. And that's pretty dope. I'm a believer that art is dangerous because it connects everything and everyone. Politicians talk down on art and cut the budget because they know it puts poor and rich people together to have conversations about their dislike of politics. You know what I mean? Parents who are working class, they ain't got time to worry about art. You play baseball or football because it's structured. They ain't got time to go downtown where there's no parking lot. So you find ways to get the kids into that, and that way you are raising a generation of parents that will take public transport to take their kids to have a walk in the park and go see art. It's a real investment. So I think I'm impressed by us in that capacity.
Mike, when your public profile has really kind of gone crazy the last few years, but you've been, you know, doing your work for a long time.
Yeah.
But when you started to kind of see, for lack of a better word, your fame or celebrity really start to kind of grow, did you make a conscious choice to kind of start utilizing that, leveraging it to affect things and causes that you're interested in?
Absolutely.
Or is that something you were already doing already?
To me, it's just something you do. And I tell people, like, as a kid, I was an organizer, right? But now I can't be at meetings every week organizing whatever particular thing is going on in my local community. But what I can be is a mobilizer and an amplifier. You know, I'm a rapper, so it's unspoken. It requires you to wear jewelry. You know, I couldn't have went out and got my initials on it. I went out and got a reproduction of a Cellini sculpture that I loved as a kid. It's Perseus with Medusa's head. My wife saw me admire it and had it made for me. You know what I mean? So everything from things that are that subtle that will get me action, a rap interview, what's that? So I get a chance to talk about it and pique a kid's curiosity, and that kid will know, oh, no, it's cool to like rap and still love art, and I still can go to SCAD, and I still can become an illustrator. I still can work at the Cartoon Network and start a family and bring my kid here. That matters to me. Showing up doing interviews for the museum matters to me. So becoming more famous or influencer, whatever they call it these days, it just but more people just choose to listen to me. But my message has always been the same.
Yeah.
When I worked at AutoZone, I still came to the house and told people that, you know, people would come in and say, I don't know what I'm going to do with my kids this summer. You should take them to the high.
I said, this guy at AutoZone said I should come by and check out the museum.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people come up to me, they're like, I remember when you worked at AutoZone.
Hearing a very enthusiastic recommendation from someone to go see something, whether they're working at AutoZone or they're the most famous rapper in the world, does more than any billboard or any
Absolutely.
Digital ad. I mean, that enthusiasm and fervor is just so contagious.
Absolutely.
Rand, talk about what you kind of see moving forward. We've kind of talked about, you know, this last year with the leadership of the museum over the next year or 2 years. I'm sure you have a strategic plan to kind of make this work even more lasting or grow what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've worked really hard over the course of the past 3.5 years, I think, to change ourselves to become a profoundly different magnet within our community. And I think the end result is that we're really trying to figure out how do we become at least one version, not the version, but at least one version of a national model of community engagement. You know, what does that look like for us? And so as an institution, you know, I tell people that we're creating a culture where people are coming to work every day and sort of asking themselves the question, you know, unconsciously, you know, what are we going to do? What is it the world needs for us to accomplish today, right? But I think that we're also creating a culture where people are coming to work every day, and very intentionally and very consciously, we're asking ourselves the question, what are we going to do to change Atlanta? What's the High Museum of Art going to do to make a positive, immediate difference within our community, and what does that look like? And given the fact that we've been at least certainly modestly successful in transforming the demographics of who's coming to the museum, now that we've got this audience that we want, as I said before, we're really now trying to figure out, okay, how do we be a brave space? How do we, you know, amplify a diverse set of voices that are represented in the artists that we put on display, the work that's on display, and then how do we frame a dialogue between that work, those perspectives, and the people that are coming into the building to create, hopefully, something very powerful for our community.
Today's episode of Museum Confidential is brought to you by Mustaminix, the once-daily pill designed to combat symptoms of museum fatigue. When you visit a museum, do you feel groggy, bored, out of sorts? It's not always the art that's to blame. A recent study found that 1 in 4 people experience the effects of museum fatigue. It doesn't have to be this way. With once-daily Mustaminix, museums come alive like never before. It definitely hasn't been FDA approved, and we don't really know what's in it. But they tell us it works, and we do need sponsors. So if you find yourself wandering through a museum for longer than 4 hours, call your doctor and brag. Thanks, Mustaminix. I think I could cover several more galleries. How many floors are in this building? Mustaminix, art appreciation on your terms.
Side effects include intense cultural stimulation, dry mouth, loudly pontificating on art history among your friends, eyebrow baldness, humming, cravings for fine cheeses and wines, compulsive selfie-taking, numb lips, existential dilemmas, halitosis, and uncontrollable urges to enroll in adult continuing education classes. Use as directed.
So, Mike, here's I'm going to give you a scenario. It's a Friday night, and you've signed on to be a docent for a day at the museum. It's Killer Mike's museum tour, you know. It's sold out quick online because everybody wanted to be part of it. There were only like 35 spots. What's the first thing you're going to take this group to see at the museum, you know?
If I could bring an exhibit to Atlanta that I think, I'd bring a Norman Rockwell exhibit and I'd bring Gordon Parks. And Eddie Claude just talked in the wake of, another tragedy about America and some of the ugliness that this country was founded on and is perpetuated. And he talked about us, which is ironically the United States, us. But Baldwin, one of my favorite authors, continually talked about us, right? He talked about a reckoning between white and black American and social class and things of that nature. And he was always all-inclusive in saying that, a lot of times we point and say the responsibility is there to fix. It's not black people's responsibility. It's white people's responsibility. It's not black. And what we always kind of forget is that there are really only two groups of people in this country who can't ever go back with the people who broke from Britain to get here and the people who brought here captured. Like, we are connected. We are us. And those two artists in particular, Parks and his photography, when he went through in the South, it was the 50s or 60s, and just took these iconic images of Americans. Now, they just happen to be black, but they're Americans. But it's one of the few places where you see African Americans, descendants of slavery, in a very normal way. In a way that's not aggrandized by advertisements that happened in the late 1900s, that picture where every black person is happy and jovial no matter the circumstance. But whether it was the poverty-stricken South or North or whether it was the daintiness of her mother and her daughter at Woolworth, he took pictures of us in that way, in the way that Norman Rockwell painted Americana in a very iconic and realistic way. Those two people have struck me very deep as an American. And both of them are American artists, and I've always been very prideful. So those would be probably the two exhibits that I've brought in terms of, the people that are gone. And in terms of living artists, if Fahamu Piku, I would do something, like Fahamu does huge paintings now, I'd go bigger, like Dolly Big, like 25, 24 feet, you know what I mean? I'd do him, and from the hip-hop spectrum, I think Jonathan Mannion is absolutely incredible, what he's been able to capture. And then just local people on the come up. You got photographers like Steve West, who's amazing. I think my man Cedric Smith out of Savannah, who's absolutely amazing.
What's your go-to spot in the museum? If you had the place to yourself for a day and you got to go hang out there, is there a thing you always try to see when you're there that you just love to see?
It used to be on the bottom. Did they move it? The African artifacts.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one I like going to because being a black kid, oftentimes you're kind of dropped in the middle of history with slavery. Sorry. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like, okay, the story starts here. And I can honestly say those artifacts, the West African artifacts, the Ghanaian, you got to see the statues in gold that precede the Greek architecture and art, not only precede, but inspired some. That's the stuff because as a kid, as a black kid, there was a need for me to have confidence. And cultural confidence comes with seeing not I've done something better or not even I've done it first, but just that I've done it. Dr. John Henry Clark said the greatest travesty of slavery, in the transatlantic slave trade was not just, you know, the fact that human beings were stripped of everything, dignity, but Africans were robbed from being a part of the discourse of world history. We were robbed of that. You're robbed of the information. All people, not just black people, are robbed of the information. Like, when you go to the museums in Britain, you see architecture. I mean, you see art from Nigeria, from Ghana, just basically places that have been raided. But it put me closer. I love the fact that I can go to the high and I can walk Michael through, and one of the first things in the room she sees are people who look like her. So there is no question coming out of the museum, you know, where was I? Because we started there. So that's the place I like to start. And then whatever they got hot that month, like an Atlanta club, I'll get there because that's where all the cool people are going to be.
Well, cool people definitely is one of the things we're talking about. Rand, are you going to reach out to other influencers in the community that you think could kind of do some of the work that Mike is doing here? You know, is this something that you kind of see growing as far as bringing different voices into the board and leadership?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and again, it's not my responsibility. It's our nominating committee, right?
Yeah.
And I think that they've done a remarkable job over the last number of years at really diversifying our board, whether it's been based on gender, age. Now about 20% of our board members are people of color. We still have some work to do, but it's something that they're, I think, very focused on. You know, it's not necessarily linear, but it makes perfect sense if you change your audience, so to speak, to reflect the community that you serve, and then your membership starts to reflect the audience that's coming through your doors. At a certain point, you really need to take a step back and say, okay, does my board reflect the people coming through our doors and our membership and so forth? And I think that they totally get that, and they've been working hard on that part of it. So to answer your question specifically, yeah, I mean, I think that there is a great opportunity there, as I said earlier, to kind of build some additional bridges to the creative community, because there's a ton of talent, homegrown talent, that are really committed not only to their own work and projects, but also to making Atlanta, you know, a super vibrant city.
So I was looking through the museum's board bylaws, and one of the things that's kind of buried in there that you might not know, Mike, is that it says, if you're on the board, you can shoot a music video in the museum anytime you want.
We got it.
So, I don't know if you saw that when you signed up, but I'm waiting for the Run the Jewels music video at the High Museum. Or should we expect that at some point?
Definitely. Want to do that. Now, if I'll be granted permission, we'll see after they hear the record.
Yeah.
But definitely.
Rand, can you help?
There's always a
fee
for stuff like that.
we don't mind making sure money goes to a place that's going to...
If Jay-Z and Beyonce can do the Louvre, yeah. Killer Mike's going to do a video at the High.
You know, one of the coolest things about being a Run the Jewels member is, of course, you rap, so you get to buy jewelry, right? So I bought the pendants that I tend to buy, sculptures that I think are beautiful, and people know my story. And I fell in love with the Winged Victory of Samothrace at about 15 years old in Miss Winfall's class. We were discussing sculpture. I hated sculpture. I wasn't very good at it. The girls in the class were much better at it. I sucked. I was just like, I'll be glad when I can go to photography. You know what I mean? Go to Mr. Murray's class. But I got shown this statue, and I was just like, the first thing I thought was, I really would like to steal that. And it was so, and again, I'm a kid, so I've grown up, you know, as kids have grown up with Nike, essentially. And, you know, beyond the Michael Jordan stuff, when I found out what Nike meant, I was always attracted to it. So I got a chance to get a 1 kilo version of that made. When they got a 3D scan of the actual sculpture, had it made. And it's a part of the Run the Jewels mythology. So the funny thing is, when people go to the Louvre, they find the sculpture, it's at the top of the steps, and they do the Run the Jewels logo, which is pistol on their fist, and they send me. So on any given day, just out of nowhere from Paris, with love, we'll get these Run the Jewels fans.
That's great.
And, you know, and I would love to have the same effect with the High. You know, so if we do get to shoot a video that we would be willing to pay for location for,
yeah,
I would love to see people throwing up Run the Jewels in front of my hometown museum.
Let's make it happen. Thank you guys for chatting today.
Absolutely. Thank you for
having
me.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you.
In the late spring of 1962, the Atlanta Art Association sponsored a month-long trip for the city's top art patrons to experience the treasures of Europe. At the end of the trip, on June 3rd, at Orly Airport just outside of Paris, Air France Flight 007 crashed just after takeoff, killing 130 of the 132 people on board. 106 of those passengers were the Atlanta art patrons heading home. During their visit to Paris, they had seen Whistler's mother at the Louvre. Later that year, the Louvre, as a gesture of goodwill to the people of Atlanta, sent Whistler's mother to Georgia to be exhibited at the Atlanta Art Association Museum on Peachtree Street. The Woodruff Art Center, originally called the Memorial Art Center, and now home to the Alliance Theater, the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, and the High Museum of Art, was founded in 1968 in memory of those who died in the crash. Outside the High stands a Rodin sculpture called The Shade, a gift from the government of France to a city in mourning. The larger-than-life bronze statue depicts a man with his head eternally bowed. That's our show for this week. Museum Confidential is produced and edited by Scott Gregory at the studios of Public Radio Tulsa. To learn more about what's going on at the museum and at the station, visit philbrook.org or publicradiotulsa.org, or both. We suggest both. Until next time, look closer.